Welcome to Real Life Mentoring, where we explore real life issues to help you make an authentic difference in the world.
Hi, it's Chris and Christine, and we are back today with a special guest. I'm going to leave you in suspense to tell you who he is, but originally we aired a podcast called The Three Levels of Motivation. I think if you go back to season 3, episode 25, I'll be very specific. It was February 7th was the air date. And while that was really helpful and a really good podcast, we received really positive feedback from today's guest. And we think there's more to the story and to this podcast itself. So this is the reason for today's podcast. And our special guest is Pastor Rob Schrader. Chris, how did you meet Rob?
So Rob, you're in Wisconsin. Right. You're in Wisconsin. Dark Alley. You're in Wisconsin, but you were doing an internship, I believe, at a church in Oklahoma, the same town I live in, a few years ago, before COVID hit. As we record this, this is 2025. I was working out in this gym, and anyway, you had a face that looked like, hey, I think I could talk to this guy.
We have the same haircut. That probably,
That's it. Okay. So we began to talk and met for coffee a few times, and then you went back to Wisconsin. And we lost connection, and then we reconnected last year. So anyway, that's how it came about. Guys, we were strangers, and now we're doing some podcast episodes together, and it's really good. So when you sent that response several weeks ago on the one we did earlier on levels of motivation, I read that. And I thought, that's spot on. So I came across this. I was watching a documentary on Amazon. And that's where this came about. I thought, these motivational levels are interesting because we're a mentoring nonprofit. And when we talk about mentoring, we focus on the whole person. So we are spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, relational, and professional or educational. And so my brain is always going, how can I learn to be a more effective mentor? How can I train others more effectively to address the whole person? And so I thought, a person's motivation, internal motivation, is so important. So that's why it resonated for me. Then you come along and you had the nerve to listen to this episode and go, that's good, but. So
right.
We're talking about actually the best motivation today
right.
that brought to our attention. So thank you.
Well, Chris, you were supposed to let Rob introduce himself. So I'm going to jump in and say, Rob, introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, thank you guys. And thanks for having me on today. It's a blessing to be able to be with you guys. And I guess I'm Pastor Rob Schrader. I'm at St. John Lutheran Church in Wisconsin, and I've been a pastor for about 4 years now. It's been a blessing to know you guys, and I just thought it was cool. Like Chris said, we met about 5 years ago now, and just in the gym, and he handed me this packet of like here's what we do as mentors, and I get stuff from people all the time, and for some reason like that stuck in my head, and I just put it on my shelf, and like you said, years later. We're trying to start a mentoring program at our church, an organization that our church worked with. And it was like, I actually know some people who can help us with this. Like this happened years ago and you remembered me and I remembered you. And it just was kind of a neat way that God worked that together. So just, I was just a cool thing. I think that God brought us together again. And we were so happy to have that mentoring training from you guys. So thank you for that.
This is good for us too. So yeah, thank you.
Well, on a side note for the listener, of course, you can't see this, but they do look alike. They're both bald and they both have the same kind of glasses. So there's a lot of commonalities.
Let's clarify, though. I'm old enough to be your dad. Okay.
Right. So.
And I shaved my beard a couple of weeks ago. So
Okay.
Yeah. But I didn't have any gray in mind like you do, Chris. So.
Okay.
Wisdom. That's wisdom, Rob.
Wisdom, well, yes.
Yeah. Let's review these three levels of motivation that prompted today's episode. Like Chris referenced, he was watching a documentary. It's called Beyond Weight Loss by Keith Klein, who's a certified clinical nutritionist. He talked about three kinds of motivation. Chris, what were those?
Okay, let's see. Level one, fear-based motivation. Now, it's interesting. We probably deal with these more than we realize on a daily basis. So fear-based motivation, it gets your attention, but it's not lasting. Here's an example. Your spouse says to you, you have to stop drinking or I'm going to leave you. There's a problem. So fear is put out there. And I understand that. I grew up in the home of an alcoholic father, and some of that should have been done, But again, it's a only a level of motivation. It doesn't really speak to the heart. Level two, feedback-based motivation. An example would be someone compliments you on your weight loss. You decide to change your diet, start working out. People go, wow, I can see you're in much better shape than you were before. There's nothing wrong with that. I go to the gym on a regular basis, and if you're going to go to the gym, you want to see some results. And for someone to make an acknowledgement of that is nice. But again, it's only a certain level that it gets to. Level three, intrinsic-based motivation. Definition would call it this. It's innate. It's inborn. It comes from within. Change from having to do something to wanting to do it. An example would be, I want to get healthy to be around for the future of my grandchildren. The motivation is different here. It's inside. So someone doesn't have to say, did you go to the gym this week? I go to the gym because it keeps me healthier and strong for the relationships I want to have in the future. Makes sense?
While that's good, that's coming from within, it's lasting, we're pursuing this why. This is where Rob steps in, and his feedback was really how we now ascribe to his thought too about a motivation level that was missing. So Rob, we're just going to let you jump in and tell us about this fourth level of motivation.
Sounds good. So first, I just want to say too, like I don't have any training in psychology or motivation. It just occurred to me, you know, based on my studies of the Bible and things like that there is really another level of motivation. And I called it love-based motivation, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the way it's different than the other ones is all the other ones come from kind of self-serving reasons. Mm-hmm. Even the intrinsic motivation, you're doing it because you have some desire in the future to have health for your grandkids. But it's still, in a way, it might be others serving to an extent, but it's also still kind of self-serving to an extent. And really, I think that what we see when we see Jesus and what motivated him, and then when we see what we're called to do as Christians, we're motivated and he was motivated by others. It's something outside of ourselves. And I called it just love-based motivation. It's a love for someone else that motivates you to do what you do. And I guess Jesus is the perfect example of this. He had everything as God. He's in heaven, things are great, and yet he loved mankind enough to come to earth and die on a cross for us. And that's powerful, just to think that he could be motivated by you and me and loving us, even though we're sinners and we've hurt him again and again. He was still motivated by that, to love us to the extent that he would come and die for us. And then he tells us to do the same thing, to actually be motivated by his love for us, and then to love him so much that we go and we selflessly serve him by serving others. So I pulled out, I guess, kind of some Bible verses that demonstrated this. Is that okay if I read a few of those?
Oh, great. Yeah. Please, yeah.
I guess the first one is one that a lot of people know, John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. So what was the motivation for God to send his one and only son to die? It was that he loved the world. He was motivated not by some desire in himself, but rather a desire for us to be saved. So he loved us and sent his son. My personal favorite Bible verse is Romans 5:8. It says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Mm-hmm. And I like this one even more because it gets at kind of the ridiculousness of what God did. While we were still sinners, and sin at its core is really us offending God, us hurting God. God should not love us because we have shown him that we don't love him again and again and again. But he demonstrates his love for us in that even when we were sinners, he still sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die for us. And again, he's motivated not by some action that we did for him, but simply totally, completely by the love that he has for us that we don't even deserve. Mm. That, I think, is the quintessential example of this love-based motivation.
Okay.
He's simply motivated by how much he loves us. And then the Bible talks a lot about how we're supposed to be then motivated by God's love for us to go and love others. Probably the quintessential verse for that is 1 John 4:19. We love because he first loved us. So he loved us first, and having been loved like that, we fall in love with God. And when we love God, God tells us that we love him by actually loving other people. Another example is 2 Corinthians 5:14 to 15. For the love of Christ controls us, because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, therefore all have died, and he died for all, that those who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who for their sake died and was raised. Mm-hmm. Paul can be a little confusing sometimes, but I mean, what that essentially is saying is that now that we know how much God loves us, his love for us controls us. No longer do our selfish motivations control us and direct what we do as people, but the love which God has for us, that controls us. That is what motivates us. So in this love-based motivation, our lives are centered around and controlled by the love that God has for us. And so we go and we actually die to ourselves, Paul says. We die to our own interests, and motivated by the love that we have for God, based on the love that he has for us, we go and we love other people. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on any of that, or those were some of the verses I picked out. I have some examples too, if you want me to go through those, but I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on those verses at all.
Well, I love the last verse, because I think love gets tossed around so much. And so we're not talking about like, I love this pizza kind of love. This is a supernatural, God-given love that transforms us. Because on my own, even on my best days, to naturally want to do something for somebody else is really, I'm selfish. But when God's love through me is tapped into, oh, it's limitless. So I love that last verse, because I think that totally illustrates that.
I just think about when I first wake up in the morning, I want to start doing this. What level of motivation am I, my thoughts when I wake up? And I can tell you, they're normally not this unselfish love for others. I'm thinking about my day, whether I'm dreading the work day or a situation or whatever it is, it's already on me. And I can tell you, it impacts the way I look at my world when I get up, as opposed to, okay, God, what are you going to do in my life today in the life of somebody else?
You know, I think, you know, I guess based on that too, Chris, just maybe a common example is, okay, so you wake up in the morning and my first thought is, well, I live in Wisconsin, so it's cold. I don't want to get these covers off of me, right? Okay. I want to stay here. And I didn't get enough sleep last night. I'm still tired. What I want to do, what would motivate me just based on selfish things, is to stay in bed for another hour or two.
Okay.
But then like you got into some of the things that, was it his name, Keith Klein had said, you know, so you can be motivated by fear. Like I don't want to lose my job, so I better get out of bed. Or you can be motivated by, you know, that desire to receive compliments, right? I'm going to go to work and people are going to appreciate what I do, and that gets me out of bed. Or you could even be intrinsically motivated and say, well, if I want to provide for my family, like I better go to work today. Mm-hmm. But I think a Christian, and this is not just for pastors, this is for any Christian, you can be motivated by, I want to go to work today because God has something for me to do there today to enhance his world, to grow his kingdom, to do something. And when you have that kind of love, I guess I find that it's longer lasting. It's bigger. It's more motivating even than even the, I want to provide for my family. Like it gives you a whole new purpose for living when you're living for God and not just for yourself.
I want to ask you, okay, you've been a pastor, and so you preach and teach pretty much every week, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Have you ever done this either in the past or currently that your motivation for having a good sermon was maybe off? It was 1, 2, or 3 as opposed to number 4?
Absolutely. I guess
that's shocking.
Wait, pastors are people too.
The reason I asked that, because I was a pastor years ago, and I remember, and I look back and I go, really, I thought that way, but I did. So there's no shame in it, but it was my reality. I remember getting up and teaching and preaching, and I based the success of that message on the number of people who would come by afterwards and say, Chris, that was so good. It really spoke to me. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. Mm. And then at some point, God did show me, Chris, thank you for the message, for sharing it. But something's off here. Your motivation, for your reason for doing it is tweaked, and it needs to be changed.
Yeah, I can't think of a specific like instance where like that mindset changed, but I have become very aware of that in the last couple of years as well, where I need to not base the quality of the sermon, again, like you said, based on how many people say, that was a really good sermon, or that was a really bad sermon. but rather, am I just speaking what God wants me to speak out of love for Him? Yeah, I try so hard to guard against that in so many aspects of my life. And I guess one thing I try to do too is when somebody says, oh, that was a great sermon, or thank you so much for helping me today, or whatever, instead of saying, yeah, hey, it was awesome, and just say, glory be to God, because I'm doing this for Him. And and the more I remind my, because I forget that really easily, the more I remind myself, this is for God's glory, it actually helps me to start to live in that love-based motivation more than that those other three types of motivation.
We're no different as mentors. We'll have people we mentor, and I understand it, but we will have mentees say, man, Chris, Christina, you've really impacted my life, or thank you so much for helping me with this. And that feels good. It really does. And I want them to say that because they have been changed, right? They've been impacted, but I don't want that to be my motivation for doing it. I want it to be because I care about them. And actually, God gives me a love for them. And you learn that over the years.
I think that's kind of where I wanted to like bring this conversation eventually, was back to the mentoring thing. Because for me, as a pastor, the preaching and the teaching, that's what God, I think, made me to do. Like that comes pretty naturally to me. That isn't difficult for me to do. What is difficult for me to do is the mentoring piece. But I think that's an equally, if not even more important part of not just being a pastor, but being a Christian in general. And where I have to continually really remind myself, why am I doing this? Why am I spending my Saturday evening with this person and not with my family? Why am I taking this phone call at 3 a.m. when I'm really tired? Why am I spending so much emotional and mental exhaustion and energy just trying to deal with this? Well, it's because God has done so much more for me, and He loves me like that when I don't deserve it. And this person might have messed up their life, but I messed up my life and God saved me. And so now I get to love them because God loved me. And that's where I have to keep coming back to remind myself, this is why I'm mentoring. This is why I'm trying to help these people who are going through these difficult things. And it's, if I didn't have that love-based motivation, I wouldn't do it. But because of the way God has loved me, and because He has brought me to love Him, I can love them for His sake. And that's been huge.
I'm so glad you brought that back. But let's go back to what you said about giving us some specific examples. I think that'll help those listening to go, yeah, because I think I know where you're coming from. But give us some examples of what you've seen or what you yourself have experienced.
Sure. So like the first one that I thought of was this woman and man at our church. They've been married for over 60 years, and her husband has... I've never seen like dementia on this level. He's pretty much unresponsive, and he can't walk. He can't go to the bathroom. She like refuses to let him go to a nursing home, and she insists, she's over 80, and she insists on caring for him herself. And you can just see it when they're together. Like she loves him so much. And I'm not trying to say like it's wrong to take someone to nursing home or something like that.
Right.
But just the level of love that she has for him, she has dedicated every moment of the last 5 years of her life to completely and totally taking care of him. And that blows my mind. I have a hard time fathoming that kind of love for somebody else. But I think, I don't know what else would motivate her to care for him like that besides just this great love that she has for him.
It's amazing. Be able to sustain that for five years without God's love. Wow.
Yeah. Another, I guess, kind of strange example I thought of, but I don't know if anybody else is like a really big Harry Potter fan. I really like Harry Potter. And I think it's a example that people recognize and know. And there's going to be some spoilers probably if you haven't read the books or watched the movies, but Harry Potter is a great example, I think, of love-based motivation in that he's totally motivated by a love for his friends. And he ends up giving even his life at the end of the book simply because he loves his friends so much. And he counts his life as not valuable compared to their lives. And he would rather give his life for the sake of his friends than keep his life and have them potentially lose theirs. And I think, you know, by the way, that makes Harry Potter an awesome type of Jesus. He's an example of Jesus. She wrote the books to point to Jesus, I from what I understand. And I just think that's a perfect example of how he was motivated to even give his life out of love for his friends. And you could think of a number of, there's a lot of, you know, military stories and things like that. People do the same thing. They'll jump on the grenade. They'll take the mission to preserve the life of their friends, even though they know they're probably going to die from it. And I guess just the final example I came up with, and what's going to kind of already talked about, was just in my own life too, because ultimately I can't know what other people are really thinking or what really motivates them, but I can say without a doubt, even though I'm totally imperfect at this, like I sometimes am motivated for the wrong reasons, but I know I would not be able to do as much as I do as a pastor without having that motivation from God. That's really, it's big in my life. It's huge. And I know I couldn't do it without coming back to, man, but God really loves me just ridiculously, amazingly, astoundingly. And that's then what can drive me to do the things that people say, that's pretty weird that you're doing that. That's kind of crazy that you would go that far to help somebody. Well, I'm not doing it for me or even really for them. I'm doing it because Jesus loves them and he wants to show his love to them through me. And his love for me then is what motivates me to do that. And again, I'm not trying to say I'm really good at this. I mess up a lot, trust me. But I do know that that's where I try to find the motivation to do some things that I do. And not just as a pastor, but as a Christian, I guess.
I grew up with this mindset. If someone did something nice for me, then I needed to try to give back to them. It sounded okay on the surface, but that's a problem because it tweaks the motivation, right? And so if someone could help me in some way because what if they really felt like, okay, help this young man, help this boy. And they did out of a pure heart, out of having love for me. And then, but for me to go, now I've got to pay them back. I think some people deal with that. And you can't just let that person give to you.
I think that goes back to, you know, one of the other three types of motivation too, where you're almost motivated to give back then because you want to save face. You right. You want to show them that I'm a good person too, or I'm, you know, whatever. And you're, again, I think there are some selfish reasons for doing that. Saying that, I'll be the first one. I really struggle with that a lot too, where I always feel like, I get like mad sometimes. I got this many cards for Christmas. I have to write this many thank you notes. Like, are you kidding? I get like upset sometimes with how many, because I feel like I have to save face. I have to do in return what they did for me, you know? And yeah, that, so.
Well, Rob, I was going to give you a $10,000 check, but now I'm not going to because it'll cause you to feel like you've got to give back to me somehow. So I'm just going to keep the check.
You're okay? So nice, Chris. I can't believe how kind you are.
Well, Rob, I think what I'm hearing and understanding, I think what's hitting me is that this love motivation. It's not fluffy love. It's this God-given love motivation, but it empowers us. When God's love is allowed to rule and reign and govern our actions, then that love empowers us to love others. You know, I think about things like this wonderful example of this couple. On her own, she can't do that, but God's love empowers her, right? It made me think of, and the only reason I shared the story is, I don't like nasty feet. And God, several years ago.
Well, does anyone like nasty feet?
There may be. I don't know. But
there are some people. I've heard it.
So we had this special older couple in our lives. They never had children. They paid for Chris to go through seminary. We loved them like family. And they were so, so, so dear to us. And he had Alzheimer's. And during the last months of his life, he was just not the same person. And they were confined to this Alzheimer's living situation. And I would go once a week and just check on them and bring groceries or whatever. And one day I got there and the wife said, "Oh, sweet friend, I need to ask you to do something." I'm like, "What? I'll do it, whatever." Because I loved them, right? She said, his name was Leon. Leon's feet are in terrible condition and his nails are so long it's hurting his feet and his slippers. Would you mind giving him a manicure? And I thought, heck no, there's no way. And
that called a pedicure, by the way?
Yeah, hush it. Anyway, that was not a pedicure. That was major surgery. So I said yes, like with, you know, throw up in my mouth, but it was, Rob, it was a spiritual marker for me because I didn't want to do it. But I said, "Jesus, you would do this for him. And I belong to you. I want to do this." And oh, I began to wash his feet and clip his toes. And Jesus was like, "Girl, these are my feet. You're doing this for me." And it was such this spiritual experience. Now, in the natural, it was still pretty gross, but I was only love motivated me, but it also empowered. There was no way on my own I could do that, you know? And I love that's what I'm hearing through the verses you shared, through the examples. When we let God's love lead, he also empowers us.
Christina, I remember that situation. I was there, I believe. But sometimes God actually puts something on us to take us to that level of motivation. So he did that with you, and it made me think of years ago. We lived in Vienna, Austria, and I volunteered at a men's facility a couple times a month. It was a Salvation Army men's facility, and the men that were there, they were down and out. They had lost pretty much everything. There was addiction, abuse, all kinds of stuff they'd gone through. And so I would help host a breakfast. We'd put the food together, make it nice for them, and then we would open the Bible and talk through some of it. There was a guy there, I won't give his name, but he was big. I mean, big, tall, and just a big guy. And he didn't like to take showers very often. And he had some mental challenges, but he loved me. I mean, he wanted to be around me. And every time the first time, once we'd gotten to know each other a little bit, he would greet me with a hug. And he put his arms around me and hugged me tight. Again, I'm not a small guy, but I felt small around this guy. And when he hugged me, it did not smell good. I remember thinking, whew. Anyway, and what it did, again, God brought that on me. Chris, I'm doing something here. And so I learned, Chris, okay, he needs to take a shower, put the smell aside, but look what you're giving him by just letting him hug you. It is humbling because you go, he was probably never hugged by another man. Chances are, and God allowed me to be in his life as a stranger to become a bit of a friend, and he felt comfortable doing that. I didn't think about that illustration until Christina talked about Leon and the feet. Sometimes God says, "Chris, I need you to get out of motivation 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to bring 4 on you today, and I'm going to put a man who's big and smelly, and he's going to hug you to help you have a motivation of love. Do you follow me?"
Those are both, I think, incredible stories. And that's, and I love where you brought it to like the next level. Like, not only does the love like inspire us to do it? But then the love of God actually empowers us to do something that we find sometimes revolting, repulsive, disgusting. Yeah. And that reminded me of just another to bring it back to Christ and to connect it to the two stories you guys said. The other day in church, we were talking about Jesus' baptism and how when Jesus was baptized, I personally think somewhere between a symbolic and real sense, when he was baptized, he like took all of the dirtiness that was washed off of us in our baptisms into he got into this like dirty water so we could get into clean water basically. Ooh. And I use the illustration of, I just like put like a picture on the screens at church of like just the disgusting like sewage water. And it's like, that's what Jesus saw when he was getting into the baptism. Like I'm going into all their nasty, all their sins, all their filth, all their evil. Mm. And he did it. He walked into the water and he got baptized. He did the gross and the disgusting so that we could be made clean. And then he asked you guys to do some gross and disgusting, and yet you're able to do it because his love for you empowers you to be able to do it. And I just want to say too, Christina, that God has not tested me with that level yet, but I don't know if I think I'd have been like, I have $20 for a pedicure. How about I drive you over to... But what you did is so much more meaningful. Mm. And I can't, that's really cool that God empowered you to do that. I don't know if I could have done that, but with his love, all things are possible.
Yeah. There's a number of things in our lives, right? That we go, oh, I could never do this. And then when we look back, we go, wait, I did that? No, I didn't do that. God through me empowered me to do that. Well, we're kind of,
and I think the more that you see God doing that to you, the crazier stuff you can start to do, because he gave you this one step, I think I can do that, but then you can, and then he gives you another step up, I can, because he can do it through me. And eventually you're doing things that you thought, I would never ever ever have done that.
Exactly. But it snowballs. Yeah.
Well, I had this thought though, guys. I know we need to come to a close soon, but okay, I've been thinking about myself again here, going, okay, God gives me a motivation of love for other people. Okay, then I'm helping them. Okay, what people in my life have already had to have that level of motivation to do something for me that I've overlooked?
Your wife.
Okay, there we go. But and then what people is God going to put in my life in the future that they're going to have to go from out of those three levels of motivation to the fourth one, a level of love, motivation for other people in order for me to have a need met or to be helped in some way. That's humbling in itself. It's that, because right. I put myself in the position of I'm giving it. There's somebody and some of the people in my life who are going to have to give that to me, hopefully. And anyway, I need to remember that.
And then you see Jesus's love through them, and his love through them inspires you to be able to do that for another again. I mean, it's a beautiful cycle. It is.
It's a perfect segue. I have a beautiful young woman in my life. She's 21 years old. And occasionally she will go to Target or whatever store because she said, I feel like God just wants me to love on somebody today. And so she's actively walking around the store waiting for God to highlight. She's 21 years old, waiting for God to highlight somebody to her. So she told me it was Easter Sunday. She went to Walmart. She doesn't frequent Walmart. You know, if you're 21, you go to Target, you don't go to Walmart, but Target was closed. She went to Walmart because she needed something, but she also felt like God wanted her to minister to somebody. So she's in the beauty department and there's an older woman. She said she was my age, the older woman, and God highlighted her. And she told the woman, hi, I'm just shopping around, but I also asked God if there was anybody who needed prayer, I'd be willing to pray for them. Is there something I could pray for you about? And the lady paused and she said, yeah, my 24-year-old son died 3 years ago and I'm still having a hard time. She said, it's torn my husband and I apart. We're now going through a divorce. and I'm struggling. This woman just shared this with this beautiful 21-year-old girl. And right there in the beauty department, she prayed mm-hmm. for her. That girl empowered, I'm like, God, I want to love you so much that I can't, it just oozes out of me when I'm in Walmart. Isn't that beautiful?
And I can tell you, this young woman, I know her as well. And she did, her motivation was pure. She didn't go in there to be complimented. Oh, you're so brave to do that. She listened to the Lord and said, I need you to love a stranger enough to go up to him. And I'm gonna work, but I need you to open your mouth and ask these things. And who would have thought that she would have shared something so heavy and amazing, the loss of an adult son?
But I think that just illustrates when love, God's love, motivates us just to, I mean, I think we could spend all afternoon talking about these examples, how it empowers us, but there's fruit from that, right? That woman experienced the fruit, the love of the Lord. I experienced fruit of going, God, I want to, you know, share your love. I just think this fourth motivation of love, the ripple effect is profound when we operate in that kind of motivation level.
Yeah, like you said, it always, then they have the opportunity to having experienced God's love, to go and share that love with somebody else. You guys are in Oklahoma, great country music state. There's a country music song called The Chain of Love, which is all about that. Like, you, this person helps this person, helps this person. And it just, this, you know, it keeps going. And I think that's a beautiful example, again, of God did it for us first. And now we just keep going with that chain of love down the line. And who knows how, when we show somebody else his love, what that person is going to do. And we don't always get to see all the fruit, but when we're doing God's work and loving the way God wants us to love, there is fruit being born somewhere.
Here's another example. In my Bible, I have a small photograph of my fifth and sixth grade school teacher, Mrs. Sharon Pinson. Guys, that's a long time ago. All right. We've moved across the world. We've gotten rid of everything we own because we moved. And I still have that little picture. And I moved a lot growing up. And I go, God, how'd that happen? Well, she was so significant. She, I would say, sacrificially at times, as a teacher, spoke into some of these lives. And I was one of those. And talk about that chain of effect, that effect. Oh, my goodness. I'm talking about her years later. And I have her photo as a reminder of her impact in my life.
I love that. Rob, wrap us up. We've gone way past our time limit. We could go on and on and on, but share some closing thoughts of some things that we've talked about today.
Okay. Well, first, thank you guys for letting me come on today. And I guess just to wrap it up, I would say we got to remember, first and foremost, this always begins with God's love for us. And it's the most incredible, outstanding love possible. And the more that you ingest the love of Jesus into you, the more you realize what he did on the cross, the more it inspires and empowers us to be motivated, not by our own selfishness, but by our love that we have for him in return for the love that he has for us. And so I guess my encouragement to anybody listening today would be, spend some time thinking just how much God loves you. And the more you do that, the more you will naturally feel inspired to share that love with others, even in ways that are hard or disgusting. And you're gonna be doing God's work through that. And that's a really cool thing. So thank you guys again for having me on today.
And I just want to encourage people listening, guys, these are kind of conversations you can have with someone you're mentoring. Put it on the table, start talking about it. You go, how do I mentor someone? Get into real conversations. And this is just one aspect of it, because this topic alone impacts the spirit, the mental, the emotional, the relational. It impacts so many aspects of it. So you go, what do? Talk about things like this.
Yeah, Rob, thank you so much for your time. And I think we go on and on and on about this topic. So again, thanks for responding the first time. This has been such a really great discussion. We want to thank you, the listener, always for listening. And we want to tell you today that the Fahrenheit Real Life Mentoring Podcast is brought to you by Shelter Insurance, the Aaron Reese Agency. His agency offers auto, home, life, and business insurance, and they strive to build real life relationships with all of their customers. I can personally say we use the Aaron Reese Agency, and we are always greeted by helpful assistance. We can't recommend them enough. You want to get a hold of them? It's A-R-U-I-Z for Aaron Reese, A-R-U-I-Z at shelterinsurance.com. As always, we want to thank you for listening to the Real Life Mentoring Podcast.